Shalom liYehudim, shalom lebnei Noach, shalom legoyim. It's the evening of the second day, Dalas b'Chodesh Kislev, Parashas Vayetze, Tafshin Pei 5780. The evening of the first day, Sunday, 1 December 2019. Webcasting from the vortex of the clash of civilizations. The title of an academic's skirting the reality of the menace of militant Islam. About 20 years ago, Harvard professor Samuel Huntington became famous with a book he called The Clash of Civilizations, which was a timid academic's avoidance of facing head-on the looming threat of Islamic imperialism, waged by Muslim imperialists insisting that their victims were the imperialists. The first sentence of the Wikipedia page on The Clash of Civilizations is that it's a theory that people's cultural and religious identities will be the primary source of conflict in the post-Cold War world, close quote. The American political scientist Huntington argued that future wars would be fought not between countries but between cultures, close quote. Huntington carved up the map of the world into 10 cultures, 4 of them religions. His list included what he called first Western, meaning West European, America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand. Number 2, Orthodox, basically Russia. 3, Islamic. 4, Buddhist. 5, Hindu. 6, African. 7, Latin American. 8, Cynic, he called it, China-based. And lastly, Japanese. Western, really, here is a euphemism for post-Christian Europe and its former colonies. Only in opposition to his thesis, I see no clash of civilizations between, say, for example, the Buddhists in the West, between Hindus and the people in Latin America. No, perhaps his overarching thesis was a function of his own gentle academic temperament, shying away from the reality, as I see it, of the clash, not of civilizations, but between civilization and barbarism, specifically the menace of militant Islam. News stories today concern not only the 2 Muslims the Israel Defense Force had to kill over the last few days because they were bent on murdering Jews at random, one in Gaza with the Philistines and another near King David's first capital of Hebron, and site of the family plot of the Jewish people, the cave of not some famous warrior of the Jewish nation, but 3 couples, grandparents, parents, grandsons, and wives. We do not glorify David's military prowess beyond his brilliant slaying of Goliath when he used his brains, not brawn. No, our heroes are not in the model of Odysseus or Napoleon or Alexander the Great. Our heroes interred together in Hebron are 3 generations, 3 couples who lived in the presence of the living God. On Shabbos, apparently, yesterday, some Israeli or Israelis, obviously not observant people, were motoring along not far from the Cave of the Patriarchs when some Muslim boys, about Ishmael's age when he expelled from Avraham's family and community because he was such a wild ass of a man, were throwing bottles of flaming gasoline at a car or cars. And the army just had to shoot one of them dead, destroy him like a rabid dog. Something you don't enjoy doing, but a civilized person has got to do what he's got to do. And rabid dog is a good metaphor for the behavior of these Muslims. They seem seized with a kind of spiritual mental rabies that propels them to murdering people at random because they are Muslims. We saw this just the other day in civilized England. At London Bridge, once again, a Muslim with a knife murdered 2 people, I think, at random. And since he had strapped on a fake suicide vest, likely in the knowledge the police are trained that when they see such a vest, to terminate the menace with extreme prejudice, which is what he wanted, he got them to kill him and presumably launch him out of this life and into Muslim paradise. The facts are that Mr. Usman Khan, that's the name, he had done time in prison in England. He'd been sentenced to 16 years for planning to be a homicidal Muslim maniac. But then some legal twist reduced that time to 8 years, and he was let out of prison, but forbidden to go to London. He was fitted with an electronic tracking device, so as not to have to depend on this would-be mass murderer's word of honor. He was sentenced to the 16 years because he was planning on attacking the House of Parliament, the U.S. Embassy, Boris Johnson, then Mayor of London, the Dean of St. Paul's Cathedral, and two rabbis. For plotting this holy act in his head, he got those 16 years but was let out after 8 and was in London yesterday by special permission of his police minders in order to attend a conference on deprogramming jihadis just like himself. And like the Muslimin here, who we occasionally have to put down, like rabid animals. The Brits, the West, really have to figure out how to deal with these Muslims who are the prime threat to civilization. In an age of post-colonial guilt over racism, the civilized West, which is degenerating fast, has become impossible to talk about Muslims as the founding fathers of the American Republic talked about them. They call them barbarians and savages, not only by virtue of their violence, but the way they think. If we can call it that. Islam is nothing but Judaism stolen from the Jews, and that results in this extraordinary culture, two of whose leaders, Arafat and Erekat, could look two Western leaders, Ehud Barak and Bill Clinton, in the eyes and declare the Jews never had any temples on Haram al-Sharif. How does one negotiate an agreement satisfactory to both sides when one side's negotiators are not playing with a full deck? Or with a deck utterly abnormal and unlike a Western deck of cards of perceptions, presumptions, and values. In a nutshell, fear of being called racists, the West does not let itself see just how different these Muslims are and why the West must reconfigure how it deals with them, which inevitably will mean singling them out for special treatment and being accused of being Islamophobic. George Orwell was so right. Politics and the English Language, one of his most famous essays, focused on the corruption of thought on display in the Soviet Union in that period and its supporters in the West. Only now that the monster dragon of communism has been slain, the enemy of civilization is Islam. And the sooner the West and others see this, the better. For example, one official in London yesterday was quoted something, I forget the exact topic at the moment, because I was struck by his use of the term criminal violence. He described what happened on London Bridge as criminal violence, with others in the chattering classes there, opining on the mistake of letting him out of prison. When I suggest this is not criminal violence, and prison is not the response to it. The very concept of the criminal connotes a prophet, he breaks the law to profit, he loses control of his anger, and to release it, he murders someone. But this is different. This is not the act of a criminal breaking the law. Most criminals would not deny they are breaking the law, but not Mr. Khan, not any of these homicidal, suicidal maniacs, unique to this culture. The clash of civilizations as a concept avoids the reality that the plural doesn't belong here. There's no such thing as Buddhist phobia or Jainophobia or Christianophobia. The clash is not between civilizations, but the civilization under attack by a religion and a culture that smiles on this behavior. Oh no, the enlightened cry out, these terrorists are exceptions. Most Muslims are not like this. They're not Muslims, they're Islamists. Yes, numerically, they do not represent the mass. But that does not explain why no prominent Muslim leader, in the age of the internet and instantaneous global communication, when everybody is connected to everybody, one never hears or reads of a prominent Muslim who comes out forcefully and blasts these jihadis as agents of the shaitan, Satan, for that is who they are. How weird Islam is. When such evil is melded with the thoughts of heaven and the divine and a God who smiles down on such behavior as murdering strangers, stabbing them to death in the street. I think what the UK needs, and every civilized legal system needs, is a law overriding the common practice of never punishing a native of a country with expulsion from the country. The Russians used to do that. If they commit a major crime, they go to prison. What I would like to see for England, for the U.S., for all civilized societies, is new legislation allowing for that. In a nutshell, the proper response to Mr. Usman Khan's plotting mass murder and mayhem was not imprisonment, and the programs to cure him of his Islamism. His parents emigrated from Pakistan. He should have been, though born in England, after his conviction, put on a plane for Pakistan and told, if you ever return, obviously illegally, and we catch you, we will kill you on the spot, as if you were wearing a suicide vest.
Stay high.
Speaking before of expulsion of even the native-born, Israel's new Minister of Defense, Israeli startup success millionaire and combat officer Naftali Bennett, simultaneously declared a plan today to double the number of Jews living inside of Hebron, now about 1,000, and also reported in brief by yours truly last week, he's come out in favor of developing Gaza, improving living conditions, and doing a feasibility study of building an artificial island off Gaza, an idea originally proposed 2 years ago by now Foreign Minister Israel Katz. The artificial island would be 3 miles offshore, served by a 3-mile-long causeway for security reasons. An island to become, I think, a business center and residential facility to raise up the ancient ones. How far today Israelis have fallen from a Jewish identity for a pseudo-Gentile one that prevents them from thinking Jewish? I imagine that if someone ever tells Bennett that Gaza is as much Jewish land as Hebron, Judea altogether, and Samaria, he would need a few moments to compute this fact. And even though he sees himself as Zionist, the first Zionists did not see it as their mission to midwife not only a Jewish state, but a new Arab one. The most left-leaning of them envisioned the Zionist movement benefiting Arabs in the vicinity, which did happen, and that they accepted the partition plan of 1947, calling for another Arab state, with a piece of Palestine along with Lebanon, Syria, and Jordan. This was not an indication of their desire for that. It was the price for finally having a sovereign territory of any size. What Bennett supports, whether he knows it or not, is the philosophy that not only is Israel the guardian of the Jewish people, it must also support the welfare of these Muslims, whose record of homicidal hatred of us is a matter of record. And because Bennett is an Israeli, an identity forged by post-religious Jews, he remains blind to the lowest stratum of hatred directed at us, which has nothing to do with their standard of living, so that improving that standard of living will be a waste of time. They will never be our equals in education and creativity and productivity. Uneducated fools like the late Shimon Peres sold his visionary Oslo dream of a new Middle East in which Gaza would become the next Singapore. And never mind Singapore is mostly Chinese, nicknamed by some of the people in the Far East as the Jews of the Far East for their intelligence and productivity versus the Arab Muslims in the Gaza Strip. Bennett's plan was reported to emphasize the dual purpose of alleviating conditions in the Strip while maintaining Israeli security. No way is the population in Gaza ready for the fantasized quantum leap into a better tomorrow. All they need is more financial assistance than they have ever gotten. And as the Brits and the rest of civilized societies have to rethink the way they deal with Muslims, who are so different from everybody else, so Israel likewise has to stop treating Arab terror as if it is a crime whose perpetrator deserves time in an Israeli prison. I reason that the Israeli practice of blowing up the houses of Muslim murderers, as we did last week again, has some deterrent value, but it has an odd flavor when the houses are not responsible for the terror. I also reason that many of these houses that have produced these homicidal maniacs are not such a big deal that the loss of it is so terrible. The house is not responsible for the terror. The people inside are responsible. And just making them homeless, taking away their simple domicile, is not productive. The family must be expelled from the country. For sure, the enlightened would scream at the injustice of a variety of collective punishment. And I reply that Islam is special. We have to think outside the box. That rabid animal on 2 feet on London Bridge should not be classified as a criminal in a class with other murderers. He's an enemy of civilization, and his violence in the name of Allah, Allahu Akbar, they commonly shout. That's the name of their pagan idea of a god. The god of Ibrahim. When for the Jews, Avraham was the epitome of kindness, who wanted his seed to become doctors and teachers and social workers, not to blow themselves up. for the God of the Jews. As an elementary school teacher, plagued by an unruly child, who makes conducting the class impossible, will send him out of the room. So the remedy of Avraham for Ishmael was also expulsion, a far more humane and a gentle punishment that makes a statement to the Muslim obsessed with murder and mayhem, like Mr. Usman Khan. Prison was the wrong punishment for him. Permanent exile, expulsion, would have saved the taxpayers paying for this savage barbarian's room and board for 8 years, and saved the lives of those two poor souls he murdered yesterday. On Friday evening here, once again, Erev Shabbos, thousands of Jewish families, even non-religious ones, were eating together as a family in Sderot when the barbarians fired off another couple of missiles, each one optimally successful for murdering one or more Jews, they hoped. But also, just launching it gives you the chance to enjoy the terror they spread among the Jews and prevent them from enjoying their family meal. And what does Israel do? Israel spends huge amounts of money on Iron Dome and launches Syria's warplanes with expensive ordnance to drop objects, bombs, on inert enemy places and things. And it never seems to occur to Israel that, having done this how many umpteen times, the behavior continues. Bennett last week said he is ready for an arrangement in Gaza, but every missile, he said, fired at us will be answered. So what else is new? That has been Israeli behavior for decades. Now that we never defeat the enemy, a defeat that can only come when the enemy is routed off the land that he uses to torture us with these rockets, and I do mean torture. Last week's video of those two little Jewish children was heartbreaking. You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. On the political front, nothing has changed except the growing numbers of voices on the right who think Netanyahu should step down in the name of national unity or something, or just to have a government already, any government, but not me. I stand with the American jurists, Dershowitz, Levin, Lewin, and rabbi and law professor Dov Fischer, who also say none of these charges have ever appeared in a U.S. court, and that Israel's Proklitut, its prosecutorial arm, is making up laws. And I would add, because they think they there should be such laws. As Lieberman continues to prove my view that he stands for nothing that will benefit the Jewish people in Israel. His entire program is a war against the Jewish religion. His demands are for a civil marriage, which I would support for non-Jews here, but not for Jews. They cannot have their cake and eat it too. To be identified as a Jew but not respect the laws of marriage and divorce, the laws that have sustained this people over thousands of years. Lieberman wants to dilute the Jewish people with people who do not believe as Jews do in the matter of marriage. He also demands public transport on the Sabbath if a local authority wants it. There are also laws against commerce on the Sabbath that he wants to see abolished. He wants conversion controlled by the non-observant. He also wants to enlarge the area near the Western Wall for what the dishonest reformers call pluralistic prayer, and I call Gentile-style prayer, which demand exposes this man clearly and his antagonism to the Jewish people. Does he not know the relationship in the U.S. between the reformers and their practice of rampant intermarriage that is diminishing the Jewish community there at warp speed? Does he not know of the correlation between the reformers and their big ideas and their hostility to the most pro-Israel president since 1948? The irony of this anti-religious dictator dictating to religious Jews how they manage the Temple Mount is chutzpah. The nerve of this character to make such demands, which are of no benefit to the Jewish people. Civil marriage, as I say, is something for Gentiles living here that would be a benefit to them, and I have no objection to that. So I say, Lieberman's supporters are not Jews. Those Israelis who support the blue and white leaders, Gantz, Lapid, and the Seifer Ashkenazi, are also anti-religious, and they're not wanting to be hobbled by the strictures of Jewishness. But without the hatred of the Jewish religion characteristic of this crusader, this Marxist-educated ex-Soviet, what does it benefit the people of Israel that Yvette Lieberman wants a bigger pluralistic prayer space for Jews who do not believe in the Jewish religion? What Reform Jews believe is simply not Jewish. And this is not rocket science. What they believe in is what yours truly was taught in college and graduate school studying religion. The Five Books was the handiwork of rabbis who, after the return from Babylon, edited together different versions of the Five Books, the Chumash. I still have my old Testament college course Bible marked up according to the professor's lecture that such and such verses are the product of this writer and such verses were the product of another writer, because it is a myth that there was a man named Moses who wrote down what the Almighty dictated to him. That's a legend, to say the academics. In my day, half century ago, they taught that there had been four separate writers of the Five Books of Moses, and now I hear they teach they believe there were 16 different authors. And so in response to Naftali Bennett's plan to allow another 1,000 Jews to live in Hebron, close by the Cave of the Patriarchs, the enlightened shrieked, this is a war against peace, out of the mouth of an Arab MK, Ayman Odeh. It's a dangerous and messianic vision, he said. And then Meretz MK, Tamar Zandberg, I think her group is now called the Democratic Camp, that's the name of the party, quote, someone who established Jewish neighborhoods in the heart of the capital of Israel's apartheid, instead of dismantling them, is a messianist and intentionally harms the state of Israel, close quote. This is pathetic. This is some kind of hysterical seizure. This woman is identified with the Jew haters. She said this was a win for the ideology of the fascist far-right lawmaker Kahana, close quote. I doubt this idiot knows what fascism is. Okay, that's it for this first night of the week, and I'll be back, God willing, on Tuesday. Until then, Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yisrael.